Okay, let's go. We're 5 minutes late, so we might go a little over time. We'll see how we go. Hopefully you can see what session you're in. We've got Jerome Maguire, who's the CEO of the Motor Accident Commission, and Lou Watts, who's the Deputy Chief Executive at the Insurance Commission in Western Australia. So, Jerome will speak first. He's responsible for heading up the South Australian CTP scheme. The MAC's responsible for the management of a $3.4 billion asset portfolio. It's the state's leader in road safety awareness and education campaigns. It funds the mass media advertising and a range of partnerships and projects aimed at reducing road trauma. Prior to his role at MAG, Jerome was Chief Executive at the South Australian Attorney General's Department and the Department of Justice from July 2006. He's a long and distinguished career as an executive in many areas of the public sector, including health and emergency services, and is well known for his expertise in leading large-scale whole-of-government change management programs, as well as delivering on large-scale infrastructure projects to reduce costs and improve efficiency. And I'll just introduce Lou, save us messing around at half-time. Lou's been working at the ICWA for almost as long as I've been living. As I mentioned, he's currently the Deputy Chief Executive and responsible for insurance operations in the Commission, which includes CTP and Risk Cover, which is the state's self-insurance scheme, and the Special Investigations Division. Lou's got almost 25 years' experience in senior executive roles, which included human resources, CTP and general insurance, and has been the Insurance Commission's rep on the Road Safety Council, which is Western Australia's peak road safety body, and has been there since 2009. So please join me in welcoming Jerome to talk about South Australia.
Okay, thank you and welcome. I will spend about half the time, or perhaps a bit less than half the time, and Lou will take over the other half. And what I want to talk about is some major changes that have gone on in South Australia. Okay, so a few things just to provide a context about the SA scene. It's an at-fault scheme. It was an at-fault scheme. And we had about 6,000 claims. About 8,000 come in. We reject 2,000. 75% of the victims are covered, and it's a lump sum compensation. And we pay out around about 340 to 380 mil a year on payouts. So what we do also, apart from the insurance business, we have a kind of a twin approach to the business model. We also have road safety under our bailiwick. So we spend about $12-15 million on road safety campaigns. We do a lot of survey work, etc. And this year, because of some stellar results in our investments, we actually gave the government $100 million. And the quid pro quo was that that would have to be a hypothecated fund, so it could only be applied to road safety initiatives and black spot initiatives. And thankfully, the government saw fit to accept that. And we are now working through how to spend wisely that $100 million. Our road toll has come down remarkably, and I think this is really not much different to across Australia, but our fatalities have dropped from around about 160 in 2000 and down to about 90. It was 94, was a record year last year, 2012. The serious injuries have come down at a much faster rate. The underlying reason behind that, we've had some research done on that, but there's no outstanding one compelling factor. But one of the issues is that SA had a very old fleet going back 20 years ago or more. And it's really one of the key variants of all this scheme reform and, well, not scheme reform, the road toll and serious injuries is actually about fleet and the better fleet. And we're growing at about 2% per annum in new vehicles. So that cumulative effect eventually comes back into a better outcome for that on that slide. Our investment fund was, as I mentioned earlier, a stellar performance last year. We were $370 million in the profit on the back of basically equities for us. Oddly enough, we've been overweight in equities, and we kept on reminding ourselves that maybe we shouldn't be, and then we are the beneficiaries of overweight in equities. So you can luck out at times. Our asset liability is healthy for a state-run business, and our solvency rate, we typically target about 108% solvency. So 111 is actually the first. We've never been 111%, by the way, so it's our first at that point. And it's a couple of slides there to show you our asset base. You'll see the blue and the green on the left-hand side slide. That's Aussie and overseas equities. And the target, this 206 was our target budget for the year, or our investment budget, and we really powered past that right from the beginning of the year. This is a slide on our insurance claims. We are having a reduction over time, a very steady reduction over time of claims. And the interesting point is this bottom point here. At the moment, we've had new scheme reform, which I'll talk about a little bit. It started 1st of July. We've had this amazing reduction in represented clients are being represented by plaintiff lawyers, compared to the previous year. So this year, we're on about 10.7%. That's actually, we've got better figures than that now, but that's still quite a stable number. The current year and previous years, at the same time, the people coming in were represented, who were represented with around about 30 to 35%. So it's very early days, but one of the challenges for our scheme reform was to try and reduce the number of plaintiff lawyer behaviour or activity, certainly at the lower end, and it's turning out to be so in the first few months. The claims portfolio also is showing very positive signs as well. We've got our claims closure rate down, and that we've, for the first time ever, I believe, we're below the 10,000 claims, active claims in the system. So you can see a lot of this stuff is, all the trends are heading in the right direction. But it wasn't like that. Our scheme reform, some of these graphs here were in what we produced as a green paper about 18 months ago to convince the community that there is a better way. And we compared ourselves to WA and Queensland because, they are, as you know, no scheme in Australia is identical. But they're probably the most aligned to what we had. And our income replacement and our non-economic loss, we bookended the best, if or, I used to say to the public and our staff, the worst in Australia. And the amazing part for me was the legal expenses was just way over the top. And the growth rate of our legal expenses for the last 4 years was 45%. In 4 years on plaintiff lawyer and 55% for defence counsel. So we just had this ski slope going in the wrong direction for legal costs. So something had to give. This slide here is predominantly trying to show that the blue and the red are basically the very low end claims. It occupies about 91% of our claims, so of that 6,000 claims, 91%, or 5,300, what's classed as minor. But paradoxically, about $140 million of that 340 went to minor claims. And as the challenge was to take that out of the hands of the people who weren't injured and get it back into where it should have been. Another slide that was compelling for the community, for us to change the way we did our business, was over the last 10 years, we had premium growth at 5.3% per annum on average, which compared to, and this is using average weekly earnings, the next was the closest to us was New South Wales. That premium number there is obviously different now for New South Wales. This data was about 12 months old. But regardless of the 12 months old, that percentage increase was very compelling for politicians. We just couldn't keep it going. So if you imagine the cost of to do business with legal costs and all the other heads of damage, the worst in Australia, and our premium growth, the worst in Australia, actually it gave us the kind of perfect prescription to say something has to change. So we did. We got the law through. As I was told by a minister at the time, you know, Jerome, it's going to be harder to get it through Cabinet than possibly get it through Parliament, these changes, because there's so many people who are affected by this change in the community. And luckily we got it through Cabinet and then we got it through Parliament. It took about less than a month to get it through Parliament, which is kind of staggering as in terms of passages of bills through both houses. We had two houses in South Australia. We ended up having significant tort reforms, which I'll summarise in a minute. We also got a no-fault catastrophic scheme. That starts in July next year. We have about between 35 and 40 cases come through per annum. And we had this profound change that I was really pleased to be pushing. And we call it optimal recovery. I actually learned something when going to New South Wales and Victoria, actually. They were telling me how something that they were proud of was this optimal recovery in their legislation. We didn't have it in our legislation. So we now have it in our legislation. Now, outside of the fact that it's common law still below catastrophic, so that creates a bit of a challenge, how do you ensure optimal recovery. We want to look after SA motorists and pedestrians and you name it, whoever's injured in a vehicle accident. We want their lives to get back as best they can, and we want to be part of that solution. Yes, it's my challenge to staff and our Alliance partners as well. How do we achieve this in an at-fault scheme? I think it's doable, and I'll tell you some of the things we're doing to achieve that. And the last point there is support and care. To achieve that optimal recovery, I'll tell you what we're doing with some in-field support. So the tort reform commenced 1st of July this year. We adopted the Queensland ISV scale, and we had lots of support from Neil and his colleagues about helping us understand that and what some of the challenges were. We also brought in, which is the first, Queensland don't have this, but we thought we'll try this on, some thresholds. So we've got some thresholds in the scheme. The ISV scale is at 0 to 100, and it gives a lot of guidance to the claims manager, plaintiff, defence, courts about where a particular injury would plug into the scale, as opposed to what we used to have was a simple liability scale, 0 to 60, and it was always left up to the judge or whomever to make a judgment. And typically it was, you know, the logjam was getting up near the top. So this gives us, ISV scale gives us a lot more intelligence about where an injury might fit, but we've also got for future economic loss a tipping point, which is 7 points, and a tipping point of 10 points for any ill. We pay no legal costs for up to $25,000 cost of claim. So you can see why that figure of only 10% now represented, or around about 10%, because a lot of the claims are coming in, as that pie chart showed, are just not large claims. We've had children no fault put in as well. That's from below catastrophic, and that's the rare occasion where a child is badly injured but actually absolutely no fault of the motorist, and that our motoring peak body pushed for that, and we're pretty pleased about that. The other two things are the credit to medical reports. This is also unique. Queensland don't have it. We were told careful what you wish for, but we're trying this one on. What it is that if you are close to the tipping point of 7 points, to get your claim registered and in the system, once you're stabilised, you need to go and have an independent medical assessment by our accredited doctors and medical experts. And the independence is such that we have nothing to do with it. There'll be a separate business unit, most likely auspices by one of our universities. They'll do the accreditation of the medical experts. They'll also run, if you like, the gatekeeper, allocating claimants to the right medical expertise they need to have an assessment done by. The contract with that business unit and the auspicing body, the university, will be with our Attorney General, so it's completely separate from Motor Accident Commission. Hence, there won't be a challenge at some future date about bias. The legal fraternity is saying that MAC are trying to look after their balance sheet, which is some of the crap we got trying to lead this reform. We're in the process of setting that up. The regulations for that, they haven't been tabled yet, but they're very close. And that we hope to have going live end of first quarter, beginning of second quarter next year. If a claimant or a plaintiff disagrees with the assessment, there is an opportunity to have two, no more than two, and we want the courts to give much more weight to these medical assessments vis-a-vis other assessments. So we think that this is going to hopefully corral our medical costs to a large degree. It will take time to see how this goes. Some of the legal expertise say that we may get challenges on this because of the very nature of its... We're pushing people down to a pathway that never existed. And the last dot point there is, of course, we ought to simplify process for minor claims. We now have a very detailed claims form. It's very prescriptive. But we're also... I'll tell you how we're going to help. But we've got people to help us, to help the claimants to fill these out. But it gives a lot of authority to go back to medical records of the past, of the individuals, go to any particular information source. To get that claim entered into the system, you need to give authority. So it's very prescriptive. It's actually approved by a minister, and it has been approved. So that's the no-fault tort reform. I'll just talk a little bit about the no-fault catastrophic. It starts 1st of July next year. We call it the Lifetime Support Scheme, and it's the Lifetime Support Scheme Authority, LSA. It's a separate board from MAC. It is all about lifetime care. If there is fault in an accident, the heads of damage that are still available on the Motor Accident Commission side, so there'll be two funds. There'll be a Motor Accident Commission fund and there'll be a Lifetime Support Fund. A levy will be introduced to build the fund for lifetime support, and our premiums will be commensurately reduced because of taking that levy off the premiums. So our premiums, I should have mentioned that earlier, we took $100 off the premium this year. We add $50 on next year because of the lifetime support, well, effectively $50. So all up, long term, we've taken about $50 off the whole CTP / lifetime support. You can read the slide there, but it's the normal catastrophic injured spinal cord, brain injury, and multiple amputees, etc. And it excludes income support for unsafe behaviour. So there was a big push about criminal behaviour, or hoons, if you like, getting some sort of support. So if it was a criminal offence, even though there may have been fault on your side or not on your side, you won't be getting any economic or non-economic loss. Okay, just briefly, I've spoken a bit about this, but the optimal recovery side of it. I think I've pretty much covered all that. The most important part for us is the randomness of this process. That business unit I was telling you about, that will be auspices by a university, they'll be doing a lot of quality assurance as well. So the reports that come back from the various medical experts have to be informed so that a claims manager and a claimant and maybe their legal support can actually make a lot of use of the report. So there will be quite prescriptive criteria about what constitutes a finalised report. Okay. And this is the one that I was telling you about. This is the last slide. Field support operations. In South Australia, and I don't believe we're unique in Australia or the rest of the world, but claimants generally are all at sea when they have an accident. So what we're trying to do is take the tension and the uncertainty out of the system. And the board have just approved this piece of work. We're collaborating with police. We call them first respondents. Police, fire, ambulance and our country fire at the accident scene. If the claimant is in a condition to take information, we will be giving them some information, maybe in a kit form. The police, at the police stations, the police will be giving information out on behalf of MAC. We're also going to be employing nurses to work with general practitioners and the teaching hospitals and accident emergency places are private as well, to actually help take tension out of the system and explain to claim to road accident victims what entails, what's in front of you and how can you navigate this process. Fundamentally, not to be their advocate, but simply to provide information in a balanced view, but showing some a bit of TLC, basically. We believe that by doing so, there will be a lot of support in trying to encourage claimants to get on with their lives. And what we'll be trying to do to reciprocate is to make sure that we'll be paying medical expenses early, as soon as we can. We'll be supporting any recommended process or treatment that a claimant needs to go through, so that we don't have all this stuff that what's happening at the moment is all compiles and compresses up and waiting for a lump sum payer, and the individual's medical condition is quite often not what it should be. So we think this is a bit innovative, and we're hoping that this will end up giving us a lower representation of plaintiff lawyers in our system. It's not about the plaintiff lawyers, but just more information and less tension in the system and getting people's lives back to where they can be. And that's it.
We'll just do a...
What South Australia are doing, we're probably in the exact opposite space to South Australia. We're a total contradiction, I guess, in the two schemes, and there are reasons behind that. The Western Australian scheme, there's no pressure on premiums whatsoever, so there is a lack of, I guess, political will to make any significant changes to the scheme in WA. And if we can just click a few of these up, won't worry us about the agenda, but a little bit of background for those who don't know. Government-owned, we've been going since 1943 under the legislation that we operate. We're the sole underwriter. 2.6 million with 500,000 caravans and trailers, which are just money for jam for us. We charge them about $20 each, and I don't think we've ever had a claim on one, so it's a nice little earn if you can get it. So we look at the key financial features of the scheme. I guess the pleasing thing is the funding scenario there. Our target has been to be not less than 125% solvency, and to be not less than 125, we worked out you need to probably have 135. Because if we look at 2 years ago when the bond rates went south at a rapid rate, that was probably the perfect storm. So it's not a bad way of measuring how far you can fall. So that was the logic behind that. Outstanding claims, everyone took the big hit in 2012 for those reasons, and we're no orphans there, so... Flicking on, there's our solvency history, and if we go right back here, there was a nasty little thing happened in Western Australia called WA Inc. back in the late 80s, and we picked up most of the legacy of that. So at one stage we were about $450 million in the red. So if we weren't a government-owned monopoly at the time, we would have been out of business. So it shows that government-backed organisations, providing the cash flows there, you can work your way out of trouble. So I think that's a good history lesson for those who think it's all doom and gloom. You can work your way out. Underwriting, I guess like most CTP insurers, we generally underwrite to make a loss and we rely on investment income to get us back over the line. In 2012, we happened to get basically a new board appointed and a new chief executive. The old board, the chairman and the deputy chairman had been there for 19 years and the chief executive had been there for longer than Daniel and I have been born together, I think. So, but the message there was that they'd seen all this, they'd lived through it. But a new board comes on and people get very nervous when you see the result down here. So what are we going to do about it? And the trick is you don't panic. because bang, we're back up again. So you've got to take that long-term view. And there you can see when you weave in, TPIS stands for the Third Party Insurance Fund, because in the Insurance Commission we do workers' comp and all other sorts of things for government workers. So bang, it goes back up again, and the world's a happy place. So without doing anything, any major changes, other than the board have declared that they would like us to try and underwrite to make a profit in future so that we smooth out these bad years. Now, to do that, only one way you're going to do that, and that's pump the premiums up, and you're going to get, on our history, a solvency margin which is going to be ridiculously high, which will lead us to a slide coming up with what the government do when they see a lot of money in a fund. They put the straw in and see how much they can get out. So, what have we got here? Not much, really. We've already seen that. As far as the underwriting results, that's just putting the numbers around the graph. Investment returns has been our saving grace, and that's been our history. The red bar is our result in the benchmark. Given that it's a balanced portfolio, we've got about 68% growth and 32% defensive type assets in there. Just clicking on to where the investments are. Property, we're well above where we should be on property, and we've had a number of investment advisors tell us that's a bad thing. It's been a really good result for us over a long period of time, so you can get advice from people, but you don't always have to take it. So that's something that we've learnt along the way. Claims experience, you can see up the top line there, claims received, declining claim frequency. That's been the case year on year now for 20 years. So top-notch type of result for us. Claims closures coming down, number of outstanding claims coming down. So like the South Australian scheme, the indicators there are all good, but this has been over a sustained period of time. Gross claims payments, big year here in 11-12, and we're predicting a big year because we've got a number of large loss claims that we know are going to get knocked over during that period of time. We've got a couple of claims estimated around $30 million. Now, whether they'll eventuate to be 30 remains to be seen, but we estimate our claims on a reasonable worst case because the reinsurers get a bit nervous when things jump up quickly. So our actuary understands how we're putting those numbers through, and it all comes out OK in the end. There's the graph of claims frequency. In 1993, we did what Jerome was just talking about as far as introducing caps and thresholds on pain and suffering. And you can see the story from there. It's just been a continuous good story. Slowed a little bit over the last few years. It was running at about 7% year on year. Now it's probably closer to 5%, but still coming down. The sad part about this is, whilst there's less claims coming in every year, WA is the second worst for road fatalities per population in Australia. 15 years ago, we were the best. We're now, sorry, Leslie, we're only second to the Northern Territory. And in country WA, we're up with Thailand and a few African countries. So it's a bit of an indictment on a state that's as rich as Western Australia to have these sorts of problems. There's the claims costs as per our forecast. So we've been tracking pretty well on that. Obviously, we're getting less claims in, but unfortunately, they're costing more. I don't think we're ever going to see them get cheaper. That's very hard to read diagram, but it's where all our money goes out to the client. And the good part about it from our perspective is nearly 89% of the client's payments goes to the benefit of the claimant. What we don't think is to the benefit of the claimant is plaintiff legal fees and our own defence legal fees and some investigation fees that we, you know, when we go and... That's a graphical demonstration where you can see all the indicators heading down the right way as far as finalised claims, the outstanding claims. Premiums is always a good news story in WA, or it has been for a while. We did have an increase from July 2013. It was arguable whether we needed to have an increase, but the board set this idea of trying to get to a more of a break-even underwriting situation, so the only way you're going to achieve that is to put the premiums up a bit. It's the lowest it's been in 36 years. Vehicle growth in WA continues to roar along. It slowed a little bit. It was up over 4% for a while during the real days of the mining boom. And I guess picking up on Jerome's point, there's a lot of new vehicles in WA. The old cars that tended, the old utes that tradesmen used to use, they're all driving Land Cruisers now. So That's a graph that we like to show off about on premium. We actually had a premium decrease, which shocked the world in 2006-07, and we got no thank you for that from anybody. So the lesson in that is don't do it. As you can see, picking a time back in 1998, where the premiums would be on a CPI index or an AWA index. So that's all good. Legislative amendments. The only thing that's happened is, for the first time in our chequered history, we've paid a dividend to government. And I guess that supports the push to try and get premiums up, so that there's some, although we've got to tell the government and the people of Western Australia that's not what we're doing, but it's really what we are doing. 46.8 was nowhere near what Treasury were hoping to get out of us, so we've got a battle ahead of us in coming years, because they're putting us into some umbrella legislation now so that they can try and really tap into the money that we've got, which is all right, providing it gets used for the right purposes. Future directions. We're right into systems in WA. We've got an online crash report system, which is the only one, I think, in the world. We've had that going now for about 4 or 5 years. That means that when you're involved in a crash in Western Australia, you can go online, and once you've reported it once, it goes to the police and to us, so that makes life easy for the claimant. And similar to what Jerome's talking about, we'll pay up to about $1,500 worth of medical bills early, and half the time the people will go away because you're not in an adversarial situation with them. But you just get those little claims out of the way quickly if you can. We've been talking about this for forever and a day, but in WA there's still not that much political will for it, for the move to the NIIS. Sort of fluctuates, makes the papers one day and then it's, you know, tomorrow's fish and chip wrapper, we don't hear about it again. But we are doing work behind the scenes so that we are ready to be able to move into that arena. Unlike Jerome's situation, our biggest problem, and we'll cover that in a session that I'm involved in tomorrow, is that when you've got a low premium and the cost of introducing no fault becomes a real problem politically. How do you sell increasing your premiums by 40%? Whereas the way you're doing it is a really clever way, I think. And road safety initiatives in WA, up until about 3 years ago, speed and red light camera funding, the Road Safety Council got 1/3 of that revenue. The rest went into consolidated fund. A couple of years ago, it went to 66.6%, and I'm pleased to say that we now get 100% of speed and red light cameras, so hopefully we can improve that road safety record. So whilst the number of claims we're getting in the door continues to reduce and everything's good, people in Western Australia, and this is our big concern for a no-fault scheme, a lot of people run off the road in Western Australia, and if you're in the southwest, they hit a tree. If they're in the north, they just roll over because there's no trees to hit. But they're not our problem at the moment. But in future, they will be. So that's a real concern for us, and I'm going to be told to get off, so I'm going to get off. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee. We are out of time, but if anyone's got one burning question, I'll extend the session by a minute, if anyone's keen. Yes? If you can just use the microphone for us, please.
Just for Lou, if you were to put a guess, a percentage in on whether it's going to change to no fault, what would you say?
I'd say it's going to change to no fault.
Definitely?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable.
And is there any other big changes that you know of?
That would be the only initial change.
Yeah.
You know, obviously everyone's toying, not everyone, but most states and jurisdictions are toying with, you know, no fault, like a TAC scheme, mm-hmm. for example. But I think the first step is for the catastrophics.
Yep.
I think that's an easier message to sell,
mm-hmm.
because I don't think anyone would say those people shouldn't be being looked after. The fact that they've swerved to miss a kangaroo and hit a tree and they don't have a claim, as opposed to someone who's a passenger in the car does have a claim, there's something not quite right there.
What about boats?
Boats? Oh. Thanks, Ian. Thank you, Alan.
Right.
In WA, there's a push to have CTP insurance for boats for pleasure craft. So we're really looking forward to that. I'm hoping that will get squashed because there's no risk management around craft. That's another story.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. 20 minutes each isn't really long enough. Please join me in thanking Jerome and Lou as I stumble around to find their wine.